Diversity.
Years have caused confusion.
Oh, trash is spoiled.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of Office Hours. Welcome, as people are trickling in. I will just let you know I'm smoking a Juan Lopez number 2, which is one of my workhouse Robustos. If you're wondering what the other ones are, the RAS, or Ramon Olones, specially selected, is another one. I like the Connoisseur number 1. It's not really a Robusto, but I kind of mentally bracket it there. One of my go-to cigars in a reasonable size. I like the Vegas or Robana Famoso. That's another great one. I like San Luis Rey. I forget the name of it now, but that's another decent Robusto. Yeah, those probably be the ones. And of course the old D4 Damager, Partagas D4. That one too. Okay, so let me have a look. As people are getting here, still people trickling in. I can see once it gets over 300, we'll get going here. One of the reasons I'm quite late today is because I was in Swindon on Thursday with the Lotus Eaters, which took up all of that day because I had to travel there, and then I did various shows there and a webinar, and then I came back, and then it's half term, so we went took the little one back to Wales, saw my folks and family, but obviously that meant that I didn't have time to make any of my videos for the week. So I just recorded some this morning, and they were taking a little bit too much time to render, basically, and upload. And so that's where the other hour, just being open and straight with you guys, that's where the other hour went. I was just waiting for things to upload. Anyway, do we have a story for you today? Just before we get going, I'll remind everyone by a course at the academic agency. Where's the trivia, Matt? In fact, we've had a lot of trivia recently. There's been a lot of talk of the trivia. What about the original Foundations of Economics?
Are you sick of hearing about Marx and Keynes? Do you want to know why neoclassical economics is so flawed? Have you ever wondered how to work out the marginal productivity of a burger bun? Do you want to level up your econ knowledge? Buy it now. £350. Foundations of Economics. Foundations of Economics.
I'm here.
Foundations of Economics. Get it now.
All right. So we have got quite a minor league story for you today, but it is a prime bit of slop. Hopefully you've watched my video from earlier on, the one on Angela Rayner. I won't repeat the things I said there. Trying out a new format where I'm going straight to camera, inspired by the likes of Styx, Hex and Hammer and Dr. Steve Turley. I thought, well, why not? I've got a camera, I've got a setup here. I could just do, you know, stuff in front of my books. Let me know what you think, if you prefer the old-fashioned or if you prefer the pieces to camera. I thought it would save time, but honestly the rendering time is bigger, so I'm not sure if it does save that much time. And when you're doing pieces to camera, you have a tendency to ramble more than you do if it's a PowerPoint presentation, so there is that as well. But anyway, let me know what you think. I don't know about doing streams to camera. I'm talking about the videos. You know, I like having a cigar during the stream, so I'm going to go with a classic avatar for now. But anyway, yeah, let's say this is a prime, and I mean absolutely prime, bit of old-fashioned slop for you guys. Where is it? There you go. You love a bit of slop, don't you? Right? You love a bit of slop. So this is ostensibly quite a minor league story, but it's worth keeping an eye on because even though it's about Scottish politics and it's not even about a proper seat in Parliament. It's about a seat in the Scottish Parliament up in Holyrood. Okay, it's a bid to become a Scottish MP. And Reform are taking on this guy called Anas Sawa, who is the Scottish Labour leader. And basically, the reason I'm covering this is because often Scotland is used as a kind of testing grounds, a proving ground, if you want, for tactics elsewhere in the country. Scotland is a bit more woke and left-wing than the rest of the country, I would say. Or another way of putting it is that they're a little bit behind the times, right? So they're still a little bit kind of, you know, a little bit 2022 in the way they're running things there. But and the SNP, of course, are a very woke party. Even now they've got rid of Hamza Youssef. They've now got this guy called John Swinney in. And basically what happened is that the Reform are going after this seat. And they ran an ad against this Anas Sawa, basically accusing him of prioritizing the Pakistani community, right? Anas Sawa has said he will prioritize the Pakistani community, right? This is in the Reform ad. Now, one of the unusual things about this story is that the ad, the video ad that the story is about, I can't find it anywhere. I have searched high and low. That's another reason I'm a little bit delayed. I looked for about 40 minutes trying to find this ad. Can't find it at all. It's been running on Facebook and places like that, but it's not on Twitter. It's not on YouTube. I cannot find it. So this is one of the strangest aspects of this story is that nobody can go and check the original advert. Apparently this advert has been seen by 500,000 people. None of the new sites were linked to it. Nobody's uploaded it on Twitter. I haven't seen the ad. Okay. So I've had to rely on third-party sources. Before we get to what Farage just said, and before we get to the attack by John Sweeney, who's the SNP guy, I will just share this article with you from Scottish publication called The National, which says the SNP filed a formal complaint over race-baiting Reform UK ad. Okay, there's this woman who's in Reform now. Do you remember they kicked Rupert Lowe out, but they gained another MP, and it's this woman here. I forget her name now. We'll be seeing her in a second anyway. And just to read the story, Farage's party used selected parts from a video of the Scottish Labour leader to claim that he has, quote, said he will prioritise the Pakistani community as it targeted voters ahead of Hamilton, Larkhall and Stonehouse by-election on June the 5th. It is followed by a clip of him saying, the days where South Asian communities get to lead political parties and get to lead countries is now upon us. The ad then fades to text, claiming only Reform will prioritise the people of Hamilton, Larkhall and Stonehouse. The clip comes from a longer video of an event in late 2022, in which Sawa said that South Asian people were beginning to enter British politics themselves and would no longer be seen as just a vote bank. A selective cut from the speech was spread by far-right and alt-right agitators on social media last month in a bid to present our Europe as under attack from multiculturalism and mass immigration, specifically of Muslims. The ad ran online from the 12th of May on Facebook and Instagram, which is owned by Meta. According to Meta, Reform UK have spent up to 15 grand on the post, which was seen by around 600,000 people. On Monday, the Daily Record reported that the new SNP chief executive, Carol Beattie, has written to Meta to complain about the ad. It comes after both the SNP and Scottish Labour united to condemn Reform over the blatantly racist ad. Okay? And then it goes on and on. Now, one of the things that interests me is that I have said for the mainline British politics that Reform should aim to really flank Starmer to the right, and to, rather than doing this tack to the centre, leftist kind of wet thing that Farage is doing, he should actually push to see how far he can go, basically to push Labour, to push Starmer into calling him racist, okay? Now, the fact that Scottish politics is not in the same place as Westminster politics is playing to Farage's advantage here, because the win, the quote-unquote win here for Reform in the current political meta is actually to get the other parties to call him racist, because that is basically what he wants, right? Or that is what he should want. He should want the other parties to call him racist, because the reaction of a lot of people these days when they're accused of that is to roll their eyes, because it's been overused. The word has lost its power. Everybody saw Emily Maitlis with Rupert Lowe last week. He, you know, just bounced off him. Nobody cares about the, like, this. It's lost its magical powers, that word. Okay. So if he can kind of go Labour or SNP or any other party into calling him racist, it's just a straight win. I remember Tony Blair years ago said, look, if you get into a culture war with the right will win that battle. Okay, that's been one of Blair's steadfast beliefs. And so if Farage can lure the other parties into a culture war type territory, it's easy pickings. It's easy slop for a Reform. Now, what makes this story difficult is that I can't see the ad. I haven't seen the ad, so I cannot fact checkers. I don't know what Sarwar has said, and I don't know if what Reform is saying about him is true. Instead, what we've got is a kind of second order story where we've just got the accusation and then the rebuttal from Reform. So what we're going to analyze here isn't so much the veracity of the claim, because I can't watch the ad for some reason. It's not available. What we're going to do is we're going to have a look at the accusation from John Sweeney, and we're going to have a look at the comebacks from Reform and from Farage himself. So let's have a look at Sweeney.
There's been accusations of racism, of classism. What do you think that says about the state of politics in Scotland? And do you think this campaign has got ugly?
We've got to make sure that we have a high quality debate and discussion about the issues affecting communities. And that's what we've brought to this campaign with the record of the SNP government, the focus on tackling the cost of living crisis and making sure that we take practical measures to support families in these challenging times. So that's a set of the positive reasons why people should vote for the SNP, and to make sure that we use this by-election to strengthen the ability of the Scottish government to deliver for the people of Scotland.
You want Meta to take down a Facebook ad from Reform against Anna Sarwar. They say they're just using his own words.
What's important here is that the advert that's been put up clearly distorts and presents an impression which is not borne out by the contents of the material that is in the film. So it's clearly trying to deceive and distort the message. So, as a political rival of Anna Sarwar's, I think that's unacceptable, because it's trying to use race in this campaign against one of my political rivals. I don't think that's acceptable, and the social media companies have got to act to address that circumstance.
Which means removing it?
Which means removing it.
So, yeah, they're literally want Meta to remove this ad because it's race baiting. Here is what this new Reform MP, the one who's replaced Rupert Lowe in the party. Well, she hasn't replaced him, but she's kind of there now and he's gone. Let's see what she has to say.
Racist about Reform UK. I would not be associated with a party that was in the least bit racist.
Yawn. Ugh. Ugh. Come on, get with the programme, Sarah. Anyway, let's carry on.
It's just a word that is used to attack. We are under attack by Labour. We're under attack by the SNP in Scotland. We're under attack by the Tories. Why? Because we are coming for government. We are coming for this Labour government, and we will win the next general election. So they're just
trying to. Are you happy to make a clarification here? So let's be really clear. This advert posted by Reform UK claimed that the Scottish Labour leader had promised to.
What's really annoying about the story is nobody plays the ad. I've been looking for it all day. Where is this ad? Everybody's talking about it and nobody's played it.
Prioritise the Pakistani community. Well, he doesn't say that. Instead, he said actually there needed to be more Pakistani representation. So
Well, hold on a second now. Why does there need to be more Pakistani representation in British politics? That's a gimme to the Reform woman pooching here. She needs to go on the attack. She needs to just ignore that question and come. If it was me advising her, I'd be like, come straight in and say, why does there need to be Pakistani representation in British politics? This is we're not living in Pakistan. We're living in Britain. So there only needs to be one sort of representative in our parliaments, British. Or if it's in the Scottish Parliament, Scottish. There shouldn't be any other nation involved.
What went wrong here in the creation of that video?
Rosie, what I'm about is supporting strong British values and British culture.
You've said that, but in your messaging, because people, if you are happy to stand by the advert, which it sounds like you are, that speaks to the other things that you find important. And I'm saying here, and you're not...
Just say it. Just say, yes, actually, I do think it's pretty important that we don't have sectarianism in British politics, that we have our politics is only for our country, that we don't have representatives of other countries in our politics. It's not that difficult. Britain for Britain and the French for the French and the Spanish for the Spanish. I mean, imagine how absurd it would be if a French dude was up there saying, oh, really important to have the French MP in the British Parliament. That's a terrible accent, but, your mother was a hamster. Imagine how stupid it would be. And yet here we've got this guy, Sawar, saying, oh, it's really important to have Pakistanis in the British government. So Putin needs to grab the bull by the horns, okay? Foundations of logic. She's giving you a false dilemma. Go between the horns, love, and take her out. You could easily win this debate, and anybody watching would automatically vote for you if you just say what I said. Let's see if she does it.
Denying the fact that the video was taken out of context and suggests that Anasawa said something that he didn't, and you're comfortable with that.
So, Rosie, let me just be quite clear for your listeners and viewers. I haven't seen that video. I cannot comment on that video because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, nor have either of us, nor have any of us. Nobody's seen the bloody video.
It's quite clear, though, that I am all about supporting British values. Anybody that is here as a British citizen legally, then that's fine by me, and that's what Reform supports, OK?
Boring answer, rich tea biscuit, fucking dry toast, not even butter on the toast. Come on, Putin, up your game.
I can't comment on this particular video. It's in Scotland. I haven't been up there. I haven't been part of this campaign. So,
right. I mean, if it's Rupert Lowe to this woman, that's a massive downgrade, isn't it? It's a massive downgrade, let's be honest. no vim and vigour in her. Bland answers, absolutely boilerplate rubbish. You know, boiled egg, worse than a boiled egg, just the white of a boiled egg. Absolute rubbish.
I've got nothing.
But you must be invested in the outcome of the by-election in Scotland next week.
Of course, absolutely. And I think Reform will do very well indeed in that by-election, because in Scotland, as in everywhere else in the country, people are looking for a new party, somewhere to put their vote, a party that stands up for this country.
Terrible. Absolutely 0 out of 10 answer that was. Reform continue to be completely unimpressive every single time I look at them. The mainland Labour Party is the party that's killing it, in my opinion, at the minute, not Reform. But anyway, let's have a look at what the big man himself, Farage, says. Come on, Nigel, this is a sitter, mate. To use my football analogies, this is a wide open goal, but you got to put them away. Or are you going to be like Emil Heskey? Let's have a look.
There's a bit of a row going on in Scotland. Everyone's having a go at us. Labour, the SNP. So maybe we're getting something right. I think what I'm able to do is to show you what Mr. Sarwar actually said and how we've responded to it. Can we do that, guys?
Thank God. And at the actual clip. All right, here we go. This was at a press conference, by the way, a couple of hours ago. So it was actually good that I was delayed, so we got this.
In every mainstream political party in Scotland and across the UK.
The days where South Asian communities get to lead political parties and get to lead countries is now upon us.
So it was Anas Sarwar that introduced sectarianism into Scottish politics, making it perfectly clear his priority was to a certain section of the community. All we've done is to put out the exact words spoken by him without any comment. We've said nothing, just that we will...
Can I just do a bit of on-the-spot hands of power type analysis, right? As somebody who studied the Dark Lord Blair for many years now, the Blair Blades, the Steeple, the Claw, you know, the moves, you know, the Clinton thumb. He's got so many power moves. I have to say that this move from Nigel is weak. That move that he keeps on doing, right, where he puts his two hands in the air, it's weak. Why is it weak, ladies and gentlemen? Why is it weak? Because it looks like you've got your hand, hands up. It looks like surrender. It looks like he's being arrested. It's just a weak, weak gesture. It's not Blair power hands. It's weak surrender hands. Don't like that. If I was coaching Farage, I'd be like, Nigel, mate, you've got to get rid of the surrender hands because they, you know, it's a very weak posture. But anyway, let's carry on.
It's to put out the exact words spoken by him without any comment. We've said nothing, just that we will represent the people of that constituency. And the fact that they, having chosen to get down the sectarian route, choose to throw accusations back at us, says to me, Natasha, that we are winning. Thank you very much indeed.
So again, pretty weak framing, really. I mean, okay, he was accusing him of sectarianism, but it was weak. It was weak. Oh, I continue to be so unimpressed with Reform. And, you know, I have weeks where I consider not covering them at all. It's just too boring to cover. But this is ostensibly the big politics story of the week. You know, the other stories this week, I mean, the other stories are, right, if you were me, right, if you were me choosing, what's there to talk about? King Charles is set to deliver a speech in Canada, basically like saying Mark Carney is a great guy or he supports Canada through this difficult time, yada, yada, yada. Ugh. Billie Eilish and J-Lo have kissed, and it's been described as cringe by people. Yeah, brilliant. Yawn. I mean, there's, like, what is there? It's a bit of slim pickings, isn't there? And of course, there's the big event that's happened in Liverpool, which is, again, not the sort of story that I typically don't. There's nothing to discuss in stories like that half the time. So, yeah, really, there's very little apart from this reform story. And it's just the same old weak, wet lettuce farage, really. It's just the same old weak stuff. Yeah, the only even remotely interesting thing about that about the Liverpool story is that somebody online falsely accused me of doing it. Me, with a picture of me. And I some normie friends of mine texted me and said, like, have you seen this? I was like, yeah. And I was back in Wales. Somebody just contacted me and said, like, you know, do you want to comment on this? So I was like, well, I mean, it's nothing to do with me. So that was a little bit unusual. But, you know, these things are what they are. So anyway, let us carry on. Let's hit the super chats here, and then we'll get out of here. I think just a quick one today. I think so. Let's get up on the super thanks, and then we'll hit the super chats, and then we'll get out of here. Just a quick one. So, there's been quite a few this week. Hold on a minute. Been quite a few. So it's good that the story was short, because there's just tons of super thanks and super chats. All right. So from last week's office hours, the one on Gary Lineker. Oh, and by the way, as a follow-up to that, I told you last week, didn't I? It's a soft cancellation, cancellation. And that was confirmed when he left. And he got, look, this is the softest of all soft cancellations. Lineker says emotional farewell on final match of the day. If that's not soft cancellation, nothing is. Okay. Anyway, let's carry on. The Miss Rachel story. Why are people talking about Miss Rachel the the YouTube Kids presenter? Why is she? Let me just have a look at Miss Rachel. Why is she in the news? Miss Rachel. Well, I mean, she is one of the most annoying of all of the like the YouTube Kids thing. I had to ban her in my house because I just couldn't stand. She absolutely dominates the search things. All right, so she's become a massive Gaza supporter, and a pro-Israel group asked the DOJ to investigate her. Now conservatives are boycotting her over her controversial anti-baby killing stance. I'm just reading what's coming up. Children's YouTube star Miss Rachel meets a girl from Gaza who lost her legs in an Israeli attack. The New York Times really asked Miss Rachel if she's paid by Hamas. The hell? What? I tell you what's particularly surprising about this story, and that is that I had just assumed just by looking at her, that Miss Rachel would have been quite sympathetic to that cause, because, well, I mean, let's just call a spade a spade. She looks like she comes from that country. So that's kind of surprising from that angle. But it's not really very interesting, though, is it? You know, it's not, I mean, similar to the Gary Lineker story in a sense. I mean, people aren't up for, you know, what the Israelis are doing. That's controversial to say. In the padded room says, although if she's slipping it into kids' content, I don't know if she is, right? But if she is, then that's obviously inappropriate. But is she doing that? I don't know. Maybe she's just made a few comments here and there. I don't know anything about the story. Just like a nothing, like a nether nothing story, really. It's one of those, I mean, if this was Unpopular Opinions, it'd be a crossword week. D, get out the crosswords. That's what it would be the week. Anyway, in the padded room says, hi, AA. This is on Starmer to use prison labor to fix the potholes video from last week. Thank you for your engaging and thought-provoking content. I'm a recent student of yours at the academic agency. So I hope it's not too presumptuous of me question your judgment regarding the idea of woke being put back in the box. If Starmer is indeed aiming to consign it to history, something we all hope for, that what should we make of the ongoing presence of Bridget Phillipson as education secretary and recent leaks suggesting that the new curriculum will be more quote-unquote diverse? The thing is that it's a process, right? It's a process. Some things will move faster than others, okay? Some things will move faster than others. Okay, let's carry on. Son of Leviathan says, I believe you are understated. So this is, again, on the Gary Lineker one from last week. I don't know why that video, the pothole one, had a lot of views. A lot of my videos had a lot of views last week, actually. Son of Leviathan said, I believe you are understating the trait found amongst progressives in that they fear the end of a moral struggle. Progressives will be much more satisfied when Israel, quote-unquote, finishes the job than if a Palestinian state were created. The last thing they want is a Palestinian state created. I agree with you there, and I discussed that book, Empire, by Hart and Negri, where I forget the name of the leftist they quote, but he was literally quoted saying, listen, as soon as the Palestinian state is created, it will stop being interesting for leftists. They're up for the romantic struggle of it, the injustice and so on. Once it actually comes down to like running the place, they'll lose interest, or, you know, it'll cease to be a cool celebrity at that point. The same applies to Ukraine. The war must continue until the struggle ends. Even after Russia has won, they will still write headlines like a fanfic about Ukraine's victory. Since our economic system is progressive, the most prominent backers of Zionism and most wars are progressives from a top-down level. I'm curious about your perspective. I prefer to support Israel. I don't like our government's threats of sanctions. The theatrics have made real political discourse damn near impossible. I would suggest that the, certainly Netanyahu's government are no longer progressive, or they have not been progressive for quite a while. When they talk in the media about a shift to the right in Israel, and especially in Israel's government, they have shifted pretty far to the right by any definition. You know, it's not even a blood and soil nationalism. It's a kind of quasi-biblical, it's like a quasi-biblical thing with Netanyahu. So I don't think that they are, I don't think there's any definition by which you can say, well, they're progressives in that sense. I also think it's fair to say that when they're caught in debates, like recently with Ben Shapiro and Dave Smith and so on, they're not really for freedom of speech either. They prefer to censor their opposition or to hound them out or to shut them up and things like that, which I think is a mistake. I think it's led to a draining away of support for the Israeli cause in America. I think I read a headline very recently saying that it's at its lowest point ever, or at its lowest point since World War II or something, within America. I mean, just anecdotally, when I went back to Wales this weekend, I had about four or five like conversations with different people. All they wanted to talk about was Dave Smith and Ben Shapiro, and Dave Smith and Douglas Murray, which kind of surprised me that Dave Smith out of nowhere is kind of like a household name. I think people underestimate the extent to which normies watch Joe Rogan. That stuff has cut through. That stuff has cut through. And weirdly, it being on Joe Rogan almost like gives people permission to talk about it in the real world. This is a phenomenon I've seen several times in the past as well. But yeah, it's very notable. And to be honest, all of these activities have pushed people not like towards the Palestinian cause, but they've pushed them away from the Israeli one, would be my take on the situation. Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Big Hoth 98 says, I mean, Tucker Carlson, you can watch the video I did on Dave Smith, which had a lot of engagement as well, which is a good indicator. Like that video I made last week had, let's have a look how many views it had. Like it was over 50,000 last I had a look, right? It was over 50,000, which is a pretty good indicator that this is a hot topic. People are really into that. Maybe people who watch me now and then again, they're like, well, I have to watch this one, because that Dave Smith thing, that Douglas Murray thing, is, and the Ben Shapiro beef with Tucker and so on, people are into it. Like normies are into it. That surprises me a lot, actually. But it, you know, that the extent to which all this stuff has seeped into the real world is very interesting, and it's something that's happened, I would say, relatively recently, last 6 months, year or so. The Big Hoth 98 says the nuclear issue seems to have come up a few times now. Frankly, most of the stuff going on today is more visible due to social media, smartphones, etc., moving from plausible deniability to now what we call implausible deniability. I would recommend reading Austin Carson's Secret Wars. It's a good primer as to how states on different sides of a conflict collude with each other behind the scenes to limit escalation into nuclear or large-scale conventional war, while also allowing them to fight with each other in a more limited regional conflict. That was on the Gary Lineker video as well. I think you said it all. Artinoism says, this was on the Steven Spielberg video. Now, the Steven Spielberg video also got a huge amount of engagement. Last I saw, that was over 50,000 as well for last week. Last week was kind of like a gangbusters week. That was over 40,000. I got a lot of subs off that new video. A lot of people who watched that video checked me out for the first time. So obviously that Spielberg video went to a bit of YouTube that I don't usually reach. And and a lot of people were like, I love this instant sub and all that sort of stuff, which is good. If you're one of those people, welcome. Although you probably weren't interested in local level Scottish politics. You know, it is what it is. This is a British channel after all. But I do touch on American topics often as well. If you're brand new, Monday I do something book related. Tuesday I do British news, and I do this show as well. Wednesday I do an American related topic. Like Spielberg last week was, you know, it was American culture, or I do American news. Thursday ostensibly is international news or world news, okay? Or foreign policy, I guess you put it that way. So that's the way my week runs. And then I do office hours on Tuesday and the reviewing Adam Curtis, The Deepest Law, with my buddy Simon Roberts and Horace tomorrow. Studio Rainer. Art Dinoism says, even if we factor in the disruption of the internet, this is on the Spielberg, do you think there was a failure to reproduce boomer truth in the 2000s? Zoomer ignorance would suggest so. Also, Lucas is Evolian. If you're into my Evolian or Spenglerian or let's just say contrarian readings of Star Wars, I have my Princess Leia video is out tomorrow. Okay. I know a lot of people love my Star Wars videos. There's a brand new Princess Leia one out tomorrow. And if people love it, I'm going to do a supercut of all of my Star Wars stuff in one video to make the kind of ultimate pro Palpatine case, all in one video. So I'll see how that one goes tomorrow. And if it's, let's say if it gets over 15,000 views or something, 20,000 views, I will make the Star Wars supercut. But as to the original point, I think one of the big problems that the regime had with the Zoomers is that they just checked out of television. They checked out of mainstream media, if you want to put it that way. They stopped watching TV, they stopped watching films, and they were just online. So their messaging, re-boomer truth, wasn't reaching them. Just wasn't reaching them. Instead, Zoomers were listening to alternative voices. They weren't getting the programming. Studio Rainer says, Israel is allowed to shoot at diplomats from 33 countries, and you still don't think the Samson option is not nuclear blackmail? London, Paris, and every capital in Europe could be hit. This is a super thanks on the Spielberg video, by the way. He's just randomly put it there for some reason. The sudden change in US policy towards Israel after Israel acquired nukes. It's the only country everyone knows has nukes, but they aren't allowed to officially state they do. Use your head, Mr. Academic. But using my head, Studio Rainer, alternative explanations are available. So, for example, remember the three B's. What are the three B's that I talked about before? Blowjobs, bribery, and blackmail. All of what you described could be explained by the three B's without nukes coming into it. Couldn't it? When it comes to that topic in particular, it's very well documented. I've got a book here by John Mearsheimer about the lobby, called the Israel Lobby. And he goes into the organizations and the individuals and the people who are paid off. And, you know, there are trackers on. I mean, this is one of the most discussed things in politics right now, in American politics. And that would be the explanation. Also, just to play devil's advocate a second, you said use your head. So I'm going to engage critical thinking skills, logic, and evidence. It's not the case that all people everywhere have been scared to criticize Israel. The BBC, for example, have always been, broadly speaking, pro-Palestinian. In fact, the British media in general, I would say, skews pro-Palestine on the topic. The voices or people in European politics, European leaders, have been condemning Israel nonstop. Spanish Prime Minister Keir Starmer, Macron even, they've all come out and condemned Israel. They released a joint statement last week. Spain, I think, joined South Africa and other countries in lodging the arrest warrant for Netanyahu. So it's not true that every single country is just so shit scared that they won't say anything, because they do say it. They say it all the time. Israel is constantly being condemned at the UN. It's constantly being attacked. And the only thing that stops it falling foul of a UN resolution is the United States veto. It's the permanent US place on the Security Council that prevents that happening, that prevents any UN action from taking place. So it's wrong to say that everybody's scared of Israel due to the Samson option. It's just not true. Everybody condemns them all the time. A more accurate thing to say would be that they have, through the three Bs, a particular influence over top-level American politicians, especially in the Senate and in Congress. And just the couple who do not take any lobby money. One of them was Thomas Massie. One of them was Matt Gaetz. Are also the ones who don't get the jobs and the promotions. They're also the ones who get attacked and singled out. Right? I mean, this is like ABC stuff. It's not because of the Samson option. It's because of the money. It's because of the three Bs in that network. Anyway, wake me up when the Epstein files are released. AM6028 says, do you think Spielberg beats out Norman Lear for inculcating liberalism? All in the Family, which produced more spin-offs than any other primetime series, was superb from an artistic standpoint, yet incredibly subversive. Merely by bringing up certain moral and cultural topics, many of which were previously considered unsuitable to bring up in public, and ridiculing the traditional stances on them, it planted the seeds for rethinking our whole culture. Yeah, I mean, I would say that Steven Spielberg probably reached more eyeballs total than Norman Lear. I know those TV shows were very popular, but compared to Jaws, Indiana Jones, E.T., and all the other movies that Spielberg had, You've got to think that the Spielberg audience was bigger, right? You've got to think that the Spielberg audience was bigger. But I'm sure that Norman Lear played a role in it as well. I'm sure he did. I'm sure there are lots of other people that you could point to. But for me, the number one has to be Steven Spielberg. Has to be. He is the Boomer Truth director, Steven Spielberg. Patient Velociraptor says, this is on the Dave Smith Ben Shapiro video. He says, hello, AA. I agree that Smith has been solid in his analysis recently. One comment from his Breaking Points talk that caught my ear was his praise of Noam Chomsky. It has been years since I seriously listened to him, so I decided to revisit some of his old talks. One on YouTube that's particularly good is called Democracy is a Threat to Any Power System. Even though it was recorded in 2015, it could have been filmed yesterday because he accurately predicted our current moment, both domestically and internationally. Always study your opponents. Yeah, I mean, I always think that Noam Chomsky is worth reading. One of his best books was Manufacturing Consent, of course, from the late 80s. Now, Chomsky is a leftist, so he has his shortcomings. One of Chomsky's shortcomings is his relative silence when it's his own side doing the stuff, right? Or when it's he's selective in the way he applies his analysis, which is annoying because, you know, he should be more honest than that. But other than that, Chomsky is a required reading. Absolutely read Chomsky. He fits very neatly into the stuff on propaganda that I've talked about on the channel, on Edward Bernays and, you know, elite theory and top-down machinations and all that stuff that I've talked about before. Chomsky, he should be part of that. Any syllabus you put together should have Chomsky on the reading list, absolutely. Academic Merchant says, all according to the plan. That was on the What Yuri Bezmenov Didn't Tell You video, which is a very old video of mine, which has had hundreds of thousands of views. Dave Smith, take on Ben Shapiro, this is Studio Rayner, says, you're an academic, so tell me, does this matter if the young generations don't care? Does it matter if boomers, Gen X, and millennials learn that their governments lied to them? The biggest threat to the managerial state is no narrative for Zoomers. In general, short-form content and tech companies have created an infinite number of narratives that Zoomers can believe in. If I were to guess, about 90% of Zoomers are not able or willing to work in a managerial capacity. Social media has achieved a multi-narrative culture in which nobody believes in anything. And if they do, they'll forget about it, thanks to their short attention spans. Jesus died because he was incompetent, and it's the greatest sin of them all. I'd be surprised if it's true that 90% of Zoomers are not willing to work in a managerial capacity. In fact, Zoomers are quite old now, and I'd be surprised if 90% of them are not in the workforce in some way, which means that they're going to be part of the managerial state in some way. But your general point about the single narrative being lost in the Zoomer generation is true. That is true. I also think that the on some issues, like on Israel, as one example, TikTok and Instagram and these sorts of platforms that the Zoomers go on, they've completely lost the narrative on that one. The short form content by the Zoomers, they've done that all of their own volition, really. This is Lamac on the Spielberg video. He says, Quentin Tarantino is just as bad as Spielberg. I've grown to hate his movies since I learnt about the Boomer Truth. And a lot of people talking about Inglourious Bastards as an example. The thing is that with Tarantino, there's a postmodern pulp element to what he's doing, where irony gets to distance him from the subject matter. So a film like Inglourious Bastard is cartoonish. It's deliberately cartoonish and comic booky, in a way that Spielberg is not. Spielberg is very sincere. He's sentimental, mawkish, like I said. You could never say that of Tarantino. And because of that, I would say Tarantino is nowhere near as bad as Spielberg. And also, Tarantino's last film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, was based. One of the best films in recent years, actually. And it was based. It was actively based with Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio. That was well worth watching. Also, Inglourious has, like, I don't know. I think the central performance by the main villain there, what's his name, Lanza, is very engaging. Christoph Waltz is very good in that film. So, yeah, I would not put Tarantino in. He may believe in Boomer Truth himself as a man or something, but it doesn't take too much away from his work, in my opinion, right? Whereas Spielberg is front and center and mainline when it comes to that. I mean, the mid-century Germans in Tarantino are functioning on the same level as everything else in his movies, which is a stock 1970s exploitation cinema, right? That's basically what he does. He does a kind of homage to exploitation 70s movies. And Inglourious Basterds was his take on 70s Nazi exploitation stuff that was made. Ken Nahara says, how do you define elite and power? Western societies, right? So this is my rebuttal to, this was a super thanks on the video, Is It All Accidental? Or Do Elites Hold Power? Which was my rebuttal to H0 Lovecraft, or whatever his name was, H0 Lovecraft, who, you know, went crazy when I said he was a slop artist. How do you define elite? I define elite in the technical way, as described in the best-selling of the book, The Populist Illusion, by me. It is the organized minority as against the disorganized mass. It is the ruling class, Ken Nahara. How do I define power? Power is defined as Bertrand de Jouvenel defines it, as the center, the capital P power, which is the, I guess you'd say, whatever entity it is that is at the center of the current structure. Okay? It's not as simple as saying state, because the power may not reside necessarily in the state. For example, it can reside in the corporation. It can reside in a particular class of people, a ruling class. So that is how I'm defining elite and power. Okay? They are technical terms rather than value judgments, as defined by elite theory. He says Western societies, brackets Anglo-Saxon, and Eastern societies seem to differ in their understanding of these concepts. The UK, an island nation, initially welcomed millions of foreign invaders, while Japan, another island nation, would never allow such an invasion and views foreign tourists as inferior. Ideological conditioning alone cannot explain the radical differences in how the people of these two islands view foreigners. Well, I would say that there has been a large psychological explanation operation since World War II to change the perception of how people view foreigners in this country, which for whatever reason did not operate in Japan. I have a theory on that, by the way, which is that Japan was allowed to, as a frontier against China, was allowed to maintain a modicum of nationalism, just as Ukraine and Poland as frontier nations, and Turkey to some extent as a frontier nation, are allowed to maintain kind of nationalist sentiments internally, because they are the countries who would be first in line for any war, basically. So that is one explanation. But also, you have to remember that it's just not true that the British public at large necessarily have changed their views on quote unquote Johnny Foreigner. The British have always been, as Jeremy Paxman pointed out in his book The English, which was only published 15-20 years ago, quite xenophobic. You know, they had this idea of Johnny Foreigner, who's not to be trusted. I'm not sure if the vast swathe of the public has ever changed their mind about that. Mass immigration has always been deeply unpopular, and whenever they've been given the chance to vote against it, the public have voted against it, as they did in Brexit. Enoch Powell was popular in the 1960s. You know, pretty much any anti-immigration sentiment has been popular. It has been pushed top down that it's unpopular, but it, you know, the majority of people have always been against it. So all of that, which also shows there's a limit to top down power, right? There's a limit, because just even since 80 years of psychological weaponization, most of the public still have the default view. Old school monarchist on, again, an ancient video called On Zoomers for $20 says, I'm learning Russian because my generation failed to mature. My family's company in Alaska requires approximately 50 employees. My father hires married men with families who are academically and physically competent. Most Zoomers in the West cannot form families. Are UK banks lending to people who can't form families? Any regime faces significant risks when its male population lacks personal responsibility. Indeed, and this is a systemic problem. It's a systemic problem. In fact, Farage, funny enough, did want to reinstitute benefits for families that have more than two children. That was an interesting one. So, you know, at least he is making sounds about it. So, yes. Studio Reyna on the manager, another ancient video, the managerial elites, says, why doesn't an economic scholar like yourself take managerialism to its logical endpoint? What? I literally wrote the book, The Populist Illusion. So I've taken it to its logical endpoint, as far as James Burnham, or as far as Sam Francis, or as far as Paul Gottfried. That's as far as it goes. I've described liberal democracy as a totalitarian system. That is the logical endpoint. So I've done what you've said. You know, Steele Arena, your tone, sir, is always quite kind of, it always sounds like you're having a go. And I don't know why that is. Why do you always sound like you're having a go, Steele Arena? It's like you haven't done your homework. Well, you're doing your homework and you don't quite realize that I've already provided the answers to a lot of these questions in the book, The Populist Illusion. Buy it now. Anyway, he says, when doing business illegally in a state becomes vastly economically superior to doing business legally in a state, the state will collapse. In Mexico, I don't know about that, actually. Did the Zimbabwean state collapse? Zimbabwe had an economy which was 95% black market. The state did not collapse. There was a coup in which Mugabe was ousted and replaced by some other doofus in a uniform, but the state didn't collapse. Still there now. Zimbabwe still 90% plus black market. So it's not true, is it? Just not true. Logic 101. You've made the statement, but you haven't proven it with examples. He says, in Mexico, cartels have proven their economic efficiency over the state. Yeah, the Mexican state didn't collapse, though, to your point. In foreign wars, drones have proven their economic efficiency over the military-industrial complex. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure if they have truly done that. Drones have won a few skirmishes and battles. They haven't absolutely proven that they've overcome the MIC. In the long run, decentralized, effective, and economically superior solutions will always win against the massive managerial, centralized, and economically inferior competitors. That's just not the case, though. If that was true, we wouldn't have had a scenario where the tendency was for states to get bigger, for the structures to get bigger, from the decentralized United States to the federalized, United States, to the, you know, the burgeoning of the federal government, from each country being different to the massive EU bureaucracy. I mean, it's not shown. It's not shown that the decentralized is more effective. Hasn't been seen. There's a point at which the massive bureaucratic structure does become lumbering, like a massive ship. It becomes lumbering. In which case, as Mosca talks about it, there's a tendency back towards feudalization, right? A centralization, which is towards the big managerial state. And then there's feudalization, which is the tendency the other way, the breaking up of these things, the breaking down of these things. And like the Hans Hermann Hoppe scenario of the thousand Liechtensteins, right? But history has not shown that the thousand Liechtensteins ever predominate and win. At most, they can feast as carrion on the ashes of a civilization that has just fallen. Like when the Roman Empire fell, the barbarian invasions are like the carrion. But it's only a matter of time before you start getting the big bureaucratic states again. And if, you know, to case in point, in elite theory, we go back to Machiavelli. Machiavelli was writing at a time of the Italian city-states in Florence and in Venice and in, you know, in Genoa and these places. This was the time of the Italian city-states. And Machiavelli, if you read him, was saying, look, if we don't band together as a proper country, we are going to get BTFO'd by all of these bigger structures. The tendency is for the bigger structure to win. And he was proven right. Historically, that is exactly what happened. They did get BTFO'd. Fast forward, why did the US Empire overtake the British Empire? I've got all these books here about why that happened. It happened because the British Empire was too decentralized. It was too heterogeneous. It was too itty-bitty and all over the place. And the American state was centralized. The American state could move as one. The American state could have a proper wartime economy to get all its ducks in a row. Which, again, is the tendency towards centralization as opposed to decentralization. Okay? So these are all reasons why I'm reluctant to say that the decentralized kind of attack drone model will overcome Leviathan. In the end, Leviathan has a habit of winning. Leviathan has a habit of expanding. And I don't know how anybody can look at the past 40 years and be like, yeah, the people who are really winning are all the little nations in the age of fucking China. So I'm sorry, Studio Rainer. You got to get rid of this Hans Hermann Hoppe libertarian streak in yourself, because it's just not true. It's just not true. All right, let's carry on. Australian Racial Superiority says, regarding the bit about the Yanks biometric scanning and DNA swabbing villagers, this was on Revering Adam Curtis last week on Bitter Lake. I disagree with Simon and Co. This is just a projection of liberal individualism onto these people. The Americans must find the individual responsible for whatever Taliban activity is happening in that village. They all look the same, and so they can't tell. Whereas the mid-century Germans would have just burnt down the village and expended a fraction of the resources. It was surreal seeing them try and export such an alien ideology onto people with no concept of it. That's an interesting point from that super chatter there. I think the liberal response or the American response would be to say, yeah, the trouble is you're imposing collective responsibility there, right? Collective responsibility. And of course, if you're an individualist, you have no concept of the collective. So, it's a very, very good point. Neat point. Studio Rainer says, this was a super chat on the now behind the paywall version of Foundations of Shakespeare Launch by Studio Rainer, who is truly one of the most random people ever to come across this channel, because his super chat has nothing to do with Shakespeare or the course. He says, the time it takes me to fill out the bureaucracy needed to go to college has taken up more time than the time needed how to write via your courses. All right, so he is talking about the courses, just not about the Shakespeare one. I'm also learned that I am a better writer when I write with a pen and paper compared to a keyboard. I don't know whether that is unique to me or if writing via a keyboard is simply fundamentally different than writing with a pen and paper. I don't know. I mean, I'll be honest. I've always gravitated towards the keyboard as the final thing. I did used to hand write essays and things and then type them up. But in the end, it's just quicker to just type. You know, I've always typed. So I do when I write in my various diaries and journals, of which I keep three for various purposes, I do write with a pen. And it is satisfying. It's satisfying to see the ink on the page and so on. But no, I don't think there's any difference personally. Discover the true... Right, so this was yesterday's video. Discover your true geocultural identity in just minutes. This was on the Thomas Sowell, the mountain people and the coastal people. If you haven't watched that video, it's an interesting one, so you should watch it. He says, mountain people are also exceedingly pragmatic, says Fresh Bobber. As Jeremias Gotthelf once wrote, they possess a limited horizon, yet what lies before them they see with utmost clarity. Unlike those coast, river, or steppe peoples who are more inclined towards idealism, I believe this is due to not being able to see the horizon. As always, excellent work, AA. Thank you very much for that, Fresh Bobber. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. And, you know, I had the thought, you know, there were eight different geocultural identities. Do you remember there were eight schools of the right? I was thinking I could, like, start, like, marrying these systems together and make some sort of, like, RPG system, couldn't I? Golden Age Puritan says, this was on the Gary Lineker office hours from last week. He says, Mr. Agent, at the risk of resurrecting a dead topic, I will say that you missed super thanks from me. It was about the jazz topic. Please know that in it, I was not saying jazz was good or bad, only making a point about its variety. On a similar note, could you do a video about one of the best music genres, Japanese city pop? I will say that anyone who doesn't like it is of indubitably inferior intellect and taste. Well, thank you very much for that, Golden Age Puritan. It's going to be a bit difficult for me to find that super chat now, or super thanks now. I can see if I can find it. I do have a follow-up on the jazz video coming out on Thursday, because a guy called Andy Edwards, who's a drummer, or he's got a music channel on YouTube, replied to my one on rap and hip-hop on Doug Morris, and he did like an hour-length piece to camera, which I have now replied to. So we have an interesting back and forth. So I'll be returning to jazz, hip-hop, rock, top-down versus bottom-up models on Thursday. Hope you can join me for that. But in terms of finding your super thanks from a few weeks back, when was that video? Here we are. How to Hack a Culture. Let's see if I can find it. Was that it? No. Golden Age Puritan. It obviously didn't come up, Golden Age Puritan. I can't see it. I can see other super thanks there, but I can't see your ones. Maybe it didn't come through the funny system there, or you know, I can't see that one. There were a lot of replies to that, but I don't. They're highlighted, and I can't see it. No, unless you used a different name, I can't see that. Although there is a super chat, super thanks there from 16 hours ago by George Gwazda, who says, as certain responses to this video have shown, many jazz fans react rather negatively when elite theory is applied to their area of interest. Is the same true of academics? Shortly before my studies at university concluded, I began to adopt realism and elite theory as frameworks of analysis. Immediately, my marks cratered from 82s and 85s to a 2.2 territory. One essay asked whether consent to military service is complicated by coercive influences. Naturally, I drew heavily upon elite theory for my answer, but was told to consult feminist literature instead, a criticism that I found baffling. As an academic yourself, do you think that realist thinking is well suited to today's university environment? That is, did I just get unlucky? Thanks for everything you do. Unfortunately, being told to consult feminist literature shows you were being taught by ideologues and not proper intellectuals. Any academic worth his salt will not mark you down for not using their favorite thinkers. That was just ideological marking, I'm afraid. And very disappointing to see. So, that's just bad practice from whoever was marking that essay. Cephalopodo says, AA, what is more important than getting rid of bureaucracy? What is more important, getting rid of the bureaucracy or liberalism itself? On that note, thoughts on Javier Milei? Ultimately, I think the ideology, I think bureaucracy is going to come about no matter what society you're living under, right? I can't think of a single type of government that doesn't have some form of bureaucracy. Ultimately, bureaucracy is somewhat necessary. Ultimately, yes, there's too much of it, there's too much red tape, etc., etc., and it can bodge up the system if there's, but ultimately, you can't get away from it, right? Bureaucracy is actually a technology. In fact, I think in Sid Meier's Civilization, bureaucracy is something you have to research, and it actually brings benefits. Liberalism, I think, is a form of mental disorder or moral syphilis, as a great man once put it. And in the long run will lead to a kind of cultural suicide. So the liberalism, I would say, is worse. In terms of Milei, I mean, I don't really have many thoughts on him at all, really. I mean, I think that he's almost kind of so, like, he's kind of meme-worthy, isn't he? That said, what he's doing in Argentina seems to be working, last I checked in, when I haven't had a close look at it. But clearly, Argentina is a case where the bureaucracy had got too much. So, like everything else, it's not a simple answer because it depends on the circumstances. My understanding is that Argentina had got bogged down. Its state had become too big. And so Milei is doing something necessary there. It's like doing the weeds or mowing your lawn or something. It has to be done once in a while. And I think that is it for the super thanks. Moving on to the super chats now. And third man says, re-Islam, six-figure amount added each year, and they've infiltrated all levels of government, police, etc. If you apply elite theory to this large organized minority, how do you see it panning out? Well, I did do a video a couple of weeks back looking at what networks or how that system works and how that community functions in British politics. It was basically reading an essay by a guy called Tom Jones, with his permission, where I looked into the mechanics. So I'm trying to remember the name of that video now, but it was a couple of months back. But it's well worth seeking out if you haven't seen it. It's called The Surprising Truth About Labour Losing Ethnic Minority Voters. It was 2 months ago, right? It's got 22,000 views as things stand. Go back and watch that. Go back and watch that. And that's an elite theory approach to the issue. The great disadvantage that Islam's got is that it has absolutely no purchase, absolutely none whatsoever, on the British mind. British people are just not interested in converting to Islam. They are seen as the other, to use leftism. They're seen as other. They're seen as foreign. They're seen as not one of me. And because of that, you're not going to get like a Muslim Steven Spielberg. Right, well, Steven Spielberg was able to somehow get underneath the mind. He was able to almost condition your emotional response. The Muslims do not have anybody even close to that. They are simply seen as a kind of, in terms of their difference from the native population, even by leftists. Let's face it. Even leftists don't make any pretense of this. You know, so it manifests as sectarianism, ultimately. And that's all it can be. So I don't think they'll ever be successful in truly taking over in that respect. Although they are organized and they do gain power, as you're pointing out, but it's not going to be... In the battle for the hearts and minds, that they tend not to do that well. Coney says, is this reform high poll number nonsense, priming for the British public to accept Farage-led reform government in 2029? Or is it Blair trying to make Starmer get his shit together? No, I think it's genuine, Coney. I think it's probably true that reform are currently winning with the British public. I don't think it's nonsense. Although, as I said in my video earlier on, if Labour kind of stick to their current game plan and ride it out, I expect to see them climbing back up in the polls if they double down, triple down on like the kind of base Starmer meme. Studio Rayner says, I plan to include my foundations of writing certificate on my academic resume. Foundations of logic has been way easier than writing. Research has been a bit tricky since I don't think the UN is competent. The UN? What's the UN got to do with it? Good. Include it on your resume. I know people who have included it on their resume. Can't hurt, right? I mean, that's something you took the time and the effort to do that nobody else did. And when it comes to CVs, anything that you can put on there that makes you stand out in some way is good. Coney says, thoughts on the possible UK-EU youth mobility scheme where over 18s, under 30s from Britain get to work in the EU? Yeah, it'll probably happen, Coney. Why not? It'll probably happen. It'll be like a work exchange thing. They love that sort of stuff. Yeah, why not? Studio Rayner says, I hate democracy because the mess is encouraging competence. Citizens without the ability to affect a specific policy shouldn't be informed of said policy. Okay. Studio Rayner says, will Oxford let me study 1814 economic policies? That period is the best example of a multipolar world that remained peaceful for a century. Of course they would. As a research topic, as a PhD, or as a master's dissertation, or as a dissertation topic, I'm sure. You'd have to find the right supervisor, of course. But why wouldn't Oxford let you do that? It's a well-worn topic, and it's very topical right now. I've got a book on that topic here, actually, by John Mearsheimer, called The Tragedy of Great Power Politics, which is all about that. It's all about that century where he overturned some of the kind of narratives that are told by laissez-faire types. And there's another book I've got here on that topic. Where is that book? Is it here? Hold on a minute. Called, it's just called like The Great Powers. Try and remember the author now. It's not Paul Johnson. It's somebody like that. What's the name of that book? The Great Powers. I'll pull it up. Hold on a minute. The Great Powers. I haven't read it yet. It's because it's too thick and I got... What's the name of that book? The Great Powers. Paul Kennedy. The Rise and Fall of the Great Powers. Because I noticed that Mearsheimer relied on that a lot in his research, in his Great Powers book. So that book, The Great Powers by Paul Kennedy, is like the go-to book on that topic. Mr. Master says, why is the UK so tied to the US? What geopolitical benefits do we get? I see us getting shafted again and again and again. That's one of the great questions. It's the question asked in Vassal State. It's the question asked in so many, but in that book by Biggs Davison, The Uncertain Ally. It's the question asked in The New Unhappy Lords by A.K. Chesterton. It's the question asked in Someone Else's Empire by Tom Stevenson. I don't know the answer. I don't know why our leaders are so wedded to America, because it hasn't done any good for the country. You know, when I went back to Wales, I saw a great symbol of this, right? I saw a great symbol of this. I took a picture while I was there, I'll show you now, right? This building here is called the Grand Pavilion. The Grand Pavilion. Under Pax Britannica in 1931, in the last days of the British Empire, that building was built for £25,000, right? £25,000. In fact, I did not take that picture because right now it's all boarded up. The Grand Pavilion is currently closed for renovations. Well, in 1931, if you adjust it for inflation, £25,000 in today's money is £3.5 million. The cost of the renovation of the Grand Pavilion today is £22 million, ladies and gentlemen. £22 million. So there you go. You can see inflation in real terms. We used to be a country once upon a time who could actually build things and do things. Now we don't have the knowledge, the expertise, the skills, the labour's too expensive, the materials, everything's more expensive. And I think a very fair way of looking at that would be to say that is life under Pax Americana, or Pax America. Pax America has been shit, basically, for everybody. It's been shit because of stuff like that. And if you go in for the old power politics, right, if you go in for power politics and, you know, world hegemony and, you know, the age of Britain and the age of America, objectively speaking, the age of America has been shit for everybody, right? I'm sure that is also true in America, by the way. I'm sure it would also be true that in America in 1931, they could build stuff for relatively cheap, whereas today in America, it would probably cost you a lot more. That's real inflation, by the way. Don't forget, I've already adjusted for inflation on the books. That's a massive escalation in real costs. What is the reason? Globalization. It's been shit. It's been shit. It's a crap system. And I think whether you're in Britain or America or anywhere else, you should want a new system to come in. Because it's been bad. Objectively speaking, it's been bad. And you can have a look at cases like that. Nobody can tell me that the Britain of today is better than the Britain of 1931 or the Britain of 1951. Or even the Britain of 1971. And the 1970s were shit, so I'm told. Nobody can tell me it was better. We have declined. We have gone backwards. Things that were easy are now difficult. Don't get me started on Hammersmith Bridge, which is now closed because the two fucking councils can't even agree on who's going to pay for it. And even if they could pay for it, there's nobody who can fix a bridge that was built in the Victorian era because we don't have the expertise anymore. But guess what? Nobody cares because nobody living in those places has any connection to the historical Hammersmith whatsoever. Nobody running those councils cares about the country one bit. So, yeah. We don't get any benefits that I can see at all. And the sooner that, you know, I saw people wearing those mega hats, make England great again. I mean, can't happen too soon. Studio Arena says, was Anime introduced top down or was it free market? I'd have to have a look into that specific case of Anime. I remember it being big in the 90s. Came in, I remember RG Vader and Akira being big in the 90s, stuff like that. Ran Mahath. Show my age now, aren't I, Anime fans? But I have no idea. I would suspect it was initially quite organic, to be honest, because I remember it being like something that was passed around in the classroom and stuff like that. Maybe computer games had something to do with it. I remember there was a Street Fighter anime thing in the 90s that was relatively big. I mean, I remember getting a VHS of it. Full Spectrum Submission says, have you considered more talking events like your introduction to Elite Theory, particularly with the launch of the book, Weddings, Bar Mitzvahs? Yeah, I mean, I want to do less live events rather than more live events, Full Spectrum Submission. So, I have considered it. And the answer is I want to do less in person rather than more. That may change at some point, but at the minute, I'm disinclined to go to many, many live things. Studio Reina says, Islam is attractive to people who have no hope. Do not underestimate Islam's power when elites are incompetent. The Mongols chose Islam for a reason. I'm not sure about the claim that the Mongols, quote unquote, chose Islam. The Mongols were incredibly pragmatic. And what they tended to do was go along with whatever was there. So in some areas, that was Christianity. In some areas, it was Islam. In some areas, it was Buddhism. In some areas, it was, you know, Confucianism or whatever. And the Mongols were like, yeah, knock yourselves out. You guys pay your taxes and we don't give a shit who you pray to. Just pay the Khan his money at the end of the month and we'll leave you get on with whatever you want to get on with. Which is, frankly, a good way to run the empire. Got lots of good books on the Mongols here, but my favorite one is a relatively new one because it takes a kind of slightly revisionist take on the Mongol Empire. It's like, oh, let's think about the other side of the Mongols, the administrative side, their tax system and so on. It's simply called The Mongol Empire. It was published by Edinburgh University Press, and the author is, I forget his name now, but it's a good book. Hold on. The Mongol Empire. I'll tell you the name of that book too. It's an academic book. Hold on. Timothy May, I think his name is. Timothy May, The Mongol Empire. That's been my favorite Mongol history that I've looked at, although other ones are available. But yeah, I think the Mongols did not, quote unquote, choose Islam. The Mongols had their own clannish, almost like kind of ethno-religion that they practiced themselves, and they let the masses do whatever they wanted. So it's not accurate to say they chose Islam. James Moore says, Althusser described uneven and combined development in which individual societies go through their perennial cycles, yet human relations still develop at the level of the universal. Thoughts. China. Where did I'd be interested to know where Althusser talked about that. Where did Althusser talk about uneven and combined development? I don't know. Him talking about perennial cycles does not sound like him to me. But that's not to say he didn't say it, of course. Just I'd just be interested to know which book or which essay, and I'll look into that. Coney says, Angela Rayner has attributes. She has assets that I think could be marketable. I'd say, foie. Studio Rayner says, Oxford or Harvard? I have no idea which country's academic institutions are superior. Well, given that Harvard is being defunded and stripped apart by Trump, probably not the right time to go to Harvard right now. So you'd have to say Oxford in that regard. I mean, Oxford's one of the places that I spent time in. You know, have good fun drinking port, smoke a few cigars there. Eat a lot of I just mainly ate cheese and cakes and things like that. Ponced around in robes. So if you like that. I would say, generally speaking, it is possible to have proper education at Oxford. It is possible. And Rayner says, did the British Empire invent Zionism? Zionism seemed like a top-down invention. I do not think that the British Empire, quote-unquote, invented Zionism. I think it was self-generated by the... what's his name? Ben... what's his name, the original Zionist? Is it Ben-Gavir? Ben-Gavir is the current... is the current defense secretary. Who's that original? Help me out, people. What's the name of the original Zionist guy? What's his name? Ben-Gurion. Ben-Gurion, that's it. Ben-Gurion. I would say Ben-Gurion is typically the guy credited with, quote-unquote, inventing Zionism. I mean, and let's just call it what it is. What is Zionism? It is an argument to say that the Jewish people need their own state, their own homeland, and that it should be in Israel. It should be there in the biblical setting, because there were alternative plans. There were other places touted. Madagascar, famously, was one of the places touted. I can see why, because I came up with my own Madagascar plan, as people know, and it's just like such an innocuous island there. You think, oh, that's not being put to much good use. I can see why people were thinking Madagascar back in that time. But so it's like, you know, it's not that much of a radical idea. It's like, oh, how can we, what is the, all of this conflict that we've had? It would be better if we had our own country to stop all of this being kicked out business and being persecuted, and that, you know, we have our own state type thing. Although I am not an expert on that topic, so I'm sure there are previous things. If you remember the schools of the right, okay, I do not major in that. I major in realism, and I dabble in all of the others, but I'm not like an expert in that topic at all, which I'll freely say. And it's a very complex and long history. Frankly, I get bored of it. I get bored of that topic. So I don't want to talk about it all the time. Studio Rayner says, wasn't Zionism an anti-Bolshevik ideology? Zionism not being top down betrays elite theory. How does it betray elite theory? It started as the brainchild of a small, close-knit, organized minority, and then they made it happen. I mean, they literally made it happen as a militant, organized minority. Of course, it's elite theory. And they used power and institutions to make it happen. Like the notion that the founding of Israel betrays elite theory is one of the stupidest things anybody's ever said on this channel. So, you know, if you want to get into Oxford, mate, you're going to have to buck up your ideas. Okay, so let's carry on. There have been a few other super chats too. Well, have they not? I don't think they have, actually. That's it. Yes, the Goblin Raid. Let's get out of here. If you can call 1 hour 40 a Goblin Raid. Yeah, pick up a course at the academic agency, ladies and gentlemen. Trivium, Foundations of Economics. Buy it now. At one point, I'm going to do something, maybe next Monday, I don't know when exactly, of I'm going to do a video reconciling my three last books. My Austrian economics book, Defenders of Liberty, which not that many people read because it was so fucking expensive and continues to be expensive. I tried to get Mises to put out a much cheaper version, but Palgrave, the publisher, wouldn't budge. They're like, no, we're still selling this book. We can't allow it to be sold for cheaper. They've got a business model. They sell to university libraries. They won't make it cheaper. So Defenders of Liberty, which is basically a book-length defense of Austrian, well, not of Austrian economics, but of economic liberalism, populist delusion, which basically smashes all of that in half. And there's a book-length attack on liberal democracy, basically. And then Prophets of Doom, which is all about cyclical history. How do I reconcile those three books, or how do I explain me being the author of all three? Because I would say in history, almost nobody has written an Austrian economics book, an elite theory book, and a cyclical history book. You know, although I will say that Pareto was an economist, so he at least has two out of the three. I would say those three areas in particular, I would be, you know, unique that I could think of in addressing all three of those. And I think it might make an interesting material. How is it that I authored all three of those books, and how do I reconcile some of the contradictions between them? Why are there contradictions between them? I'll be back tomorrow for Reviewing Adam Curtis with Simon and Horace. We're going to continue with Bitter Lake. The Princess Leia video will be 9 a.m. tomorrow. We're back to the 9 a.m.s. We've had later videos past 2 days due to the half term and being back in Wales and so on. I will catch you all tomorrow.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.